Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're back to talk about part two of the Ravens defense in that, the Ravens offense in that game against the Jaguars. Very frustrating loss, obviously. Frustrations on both sides of the ball. We talked about the frustrations on defense with Jordan Coe. By the way, if you didn't listen to those, go back and download those. There's two parts out there, more than 2 hours of content, a lot of great stuff, and Jordan's very knowledgeable. We talked in part one of this show with Josh Reed, who's joining us right now, about a lot of the things, a lot of the general notes about this game, some of the game management, some of the way that Lamar approached the game, some of the failures in the red zone. Go down that as well. I know you kind of get these in rapid fire on Tuesday and Wednesday of each week, but this is a good opportunity to go back and make sure you hit all four of these episodes. But Josh, how you doing again?
I'm doing great, Ken. Ready to roll for part two.
I appreciate that. Need to thank our sponsor again, Liquid Death, the water that will murder your thirst. Please give their product a try. They've been very good to us. Josh, your Twitter handle and your where people can find you online.
Okay, you can find me on Twitter at JoshReed907 on Twitter. And usually people from Alaska say 907, but you know, for these purposes, I'll spell it out for you. It's JoshReed907 on Twitter. And then you can read all my Ravens content at Heavy on Ravens for Heavy Incorporated. It's HeavyOnRavens.com.
All right. Heavy on Ravens, that's your own site, or are you partnering with anybody?
Oh no, that's not my own thing. They recruited me. A few months back. They've actually been trying to recruit me for a few years, but they finally gave in, and it's been fun over there.
All right, well, very cool. You're living the dream out there in Alaska in the 907 area code in Anchorage, and you're working actually as a sports writer, which is very cool to get a job with a paper. Not easy these days.
It's pretty cool writing from my hometown paper, Anchorage Daily News. It's actually becoming, people ask me all the time now, because I don't know if you heard about the show Alaska Daily that came out on ABC. Yeah, so it's loosely based on a paper that I write for, and people ask me all the time, like, oh, are you in the show? I'm like, actually, no, the events of that show took place prior to my employment there. But yeah, it's we're actually getting quite a little bit of run just off of that show alone.
Well, very cool, very cool. I hear that show is good. We're gonna give it a try. We don't watch a lot of network TV, but that's worth a shot. Let's get back to the Ravens though, and this is obviously a frustrating result here. But let's talk a little bit of scheme here. Ravens are still running tons of counters as a way to stretch the line of scrimmage, and you know, I've been of the opinion they probably need to do some other things to stretch horizontally. Did a good job with Duvernay in this game with jet motion. They did not do a good job with Hill, and they don't really have another speed back currently that can stretch the line of scrimmage. It's Hill or nobody. And I think Hill had one carry, and I don't remember how many snaps he had, but it was a fairly substantial number for only having one carry. So Hill had 14 he was in for. So they did not get him, in my opinion, the kind of touches you need to make him the threat he should be to horizontally stretch that line of scrimmage.
Yeah, and I've been one of the people, like in a lot of my writing lately, I've been really kind of pounding the rock for Justice Hill to get more involved, because I feel like he's a guy who's great, you know, north and south and east and west, and makes the real nice decisive cuts, gets upfield real quick, and has more deceptive power than people will give him credit for a guy of his size and frame. And the fact that he only got one carry really kind of irked me a little bit. I was glad that Gus got the carries that he did, because he's really efficient on short yardage. You know, outside of, you know, that one goal line run where he got stuffed for -1 yard, which really happens with Gus Edwards. But Justice Hill is a guy who I feel like if you give him more carries and kind of get him into a rhythm, you know, he's a real guy that can be really effective for you.
Yeah, I completely agree. And honestly, he missed his chance for his biggest play of the day we talked about it in part one, sidecar run. Lamar made a bad read. Held the ball himself, went for 1 yard on a run left. Lamar's going to make an occasional bad read. This was a play where if he had been looking at what Hill had rather than what he could have himself, which is that's the way he's supposed to read as a quarterback, is if he's got an opening that he thinks is pretty good himself, he can't be worried about reading the entire field at that point. Hill had an amazing setup on that right side that I think would have it potentially could have been a touchdown, but it certainly would have been a gain of 6 or 7 or 8 yards at kind of at a minimum on that play. So unfortunate, but go take a look at it if you want to. It's on the RL minus one on the sixth drive of the game for the Ravens, the first drive when they're in the red zone there. What do we want to talk about? Let's talk about one thing that's kind of getting me about this team is they really want to do a lot of zone blocking, but they have a bunch of players who aren't real comfortable doing zone blocking. And it's not even a matter of they're not fast enough, because in this game, one of the ones I noticed was McCary gave up a penetration by getting ahead of a zone blocking play. It's like, I got to find somebody to block. And rather than take his time to kind of move at the pace of the rest of the line, keep his right arm out, try and focus on nobody crossing his face, keeping the gaps relatively small, you know, allow for a cutback. He got out front of the play, and then Aluakon moved right in before behind him and made a quick tackle to take down somebody. I forget if it was Drake or it was Edwards for a loss.
Yeah. And I really thought that Drake would have got more run this game simply because, you know, they like incorporating a lot of that zone stuff, and he's been pretty effective on zone plays. He only got 2 carries in the game, and so I was a little surprised by that, especially with it being Gus's first game back. I thought they weren't going to, give him 16 carries, like basically the full workload. I was a little taken aback by that, especially, you know, given that Drake has come on strong for them and really performed well in relief duty for JK and for Gus.
You know, that's a really good point, because Edwards, 16 carries in 36 snaps. Drake, 2 carries in 18 snaps. Little different percentage there, I think we'd agree. Justice Hill, 1 carry in 14 snaps. So basically, Gus Edwards was the designated runner. Yeah, it's worse, frankly, than what they had with Mark Andrews, where when he was in the game in his rookie year and in his second year, he was in there basically as a designated receiver. He got a high percentage of targets when he was in there, and they'd bring him in on obvious passing downs, and it's some of what drove Hayden Hurst out of town. That he wanted to be that guy, or he wanted to have a more integral part of the offense in terms of being used on passing downs, being a more frequently a receiver. But with Hill and Drake, Drake was a number one back when, you know, the Ravens didn't have any of their number one backs available. Now that Edwards is back, he's not getting as many carries certainly the rest of the way. And I think I was more upset by the fact that Hill got so few carries in this game.
Yeah, and it's just like, man, like, you know, you just get Gus back, and it's just like, you know, you just got him back, and like, why are you trying to run him so much? You know, it's almost like, you know, like you kind of discount all the contributions you got from your other backs, and then you talk about how Justice has performed well and earned more carries, but then you don't give him more carries. So it's kind of like you're kind of talking at two sides of your mouth right now. And it's like, you know, if you really trust this guy, like you say that you do, then let him tote the rock instead of giving your guy who's been banged up off and on for the past month and a half, you know, the lion's share of the carries.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I, you know, they do so much counter right now. The Roman is so married into pulling two instead of one. That I think it's actually a detriment to a player like Hill. I think there's a lot of plays where a simple guard pulling power play would be fine for Justice Hill in terms of making hay, and he can bounce it when he needs to. He's you know, got that kind of speed. He certainly threatens the edge of the defense, and by doing that, you also create some opportunities for Lamar Jackson right up the middle of the field anyway. Because even one guard moving is going to make linebackers move. You played linebacker, right? So pulling guard, anything make you move more than that?
No, you. That's where the ball's going. You know, you either try to fill that gap or follow that guard.
Yeah, and then it's Lamar Jackson is the quarterback. You might be running yourself out of position, of course, to do that.
Yeah. So you really got to be judicious with your read steps on those kind of plays.
All right. Another point I wanted to make was that the Ravens are still playing the heaviest formations in recent NFL history, maybe of all time, if you relativize to the typical amount of heavies played for the era. And I don't have any way to go back and check this. I'm just continually amazed that the Ravens can throw out these formations that include so many tight ends and fullbacks and an occasional sixth offensive lineman, but it's not even very often that. It's mostly adding up the tight end and fullback snaps from each game and dividing by total snaps. And this game, it's 2.33 heavies per play. I want to remind people again, the 2019 Vikings were the only team that approached 2.00 heavies per play in the last 6 years. So we're talking probably decades in an absolute sense, and maybe ever in a relative sense, in terms of these being the heaviest packages in NFL history. There's just no other team that's approached the game of football like this in decades.
Yeah, and when you got a Greg Roman offense and the Rashad Bateman-less receiving core, you kind of got to lead into your strengths, which right now is your tight ends. You know, like, I mean, not specifically in this game because they were without Likely, but you know, like Patrick Ricard, as much as people want to complain about, you know, how much he sees time on the field, you know, he's really one of the main dictators as far as like what this offense can do sometimes in the ground game, and an underrated receiver in the passing game. Like, there are times that teams don't even account for him out there in the flats, and if you got that easy check down of 300 something pound, which they always say 307 pound, but the guy's not 307 pounds. I'm 307 pounds. I know what a 307 pound look like. Okay. And like they like to talk about his weight, but he's really, like I said, a great pass protector and a good underrated underneath check down option for Lamar.
Yeah. They used their set and chip blockers a lot in this game. So use their eligible receivers as set and chip blockers, I should say. 20 sets and 13 chips for 1.0 per play. Now, here's what's a little unusual about this is the Jaguars rushed 4 on all but 8 of the passing snaps. And yet the Ravens still found the need to do that. Now, oftentimes when we score the offensive line, so we see this happen play after play, the most common thing is you get a 4-man pass rush and it's all free releases. And we literally say those things together. I say they show 4, they bring it 4-0, all free releases. That means all the eligible receivers going out, no set or chip blockers. And so when we're recording this, we, you know, it's natural to notice the relationship between those two things. Now, the Jags do have some potentially very talented pass rushers who really haven't put the sacks on the board yet. Josh Allen on one side, Trayvon Walker, who's the number one overall pick, of course, on the other, that are often on the field together and are guys that you know, I think there's a feeling that they should be chipped. And there certainly is more of a desire to protect Patrick McCary and Moses in this game. But they're doing a lot of set blocking as well, just keeping an extra guy in, oftentimes against 4 blockers, against 4 rushers. So it was an unusual kind of a game for overcommitting to pass blocking and trying to let 3 receiver routes and 4 receiver routes be enough to create an option for Lamar.
Yeah, and I like you said, I really think it was more about giving McCary more help, just because, like, whenever they don't have their best pass blocker in the game, Ronnie Stanley, they want to make sure Lamar feels. I think it was more for Lamar's psyche and kind of confidence in his pass protection more than anything else. Not that they didn't have faith in McCary, but they wanted to make sure that the quarterback felt comfortable staying in the pocket for as long as he could to try to get the ball downfield. And it kind of, like I said, it kind of takes away, especially when they're on the rushing 4 and they have more guys in coverage, it kind of takes away the kind of things you can do. Now you have more guys in coverage to cover your limited amount of receivers out in passing patterns. So it's kind of like you're making Lamar feel confident in his pass protection. At the same time, it's kind of disadvantageous or advantageous for the opposing defense, because they have more guys to cover less guys.
Yep. Yeah, you get a much different relationship there. And once they figure out you want to do some things like that, they can do some additional tricks. But they still were able to, you know, put a spy on Lamar Jackson some of the times, occasionally effectively. Aluakon in particular was very effective at taking down Lamar in space sometimes, and particularly when he moved laterally. So, you know,
they 17 tackles in that game.
Yeah, it was outrageous. That was outrageous. He's a real player. And, you know, some of the guys the Ravens have faced at linebacker this year, and oftentimes, you know, we talk about the nose tackles who faced Linderbaum and they're huge and whatnot, but one of the problems Lamar has is with faster inside linebackers who are more, I'll say, of the Patrick Queen variety. You know, not necessarily the hardest hitters, but they're very fast getting to a spot, and they tend to be good tacklers. But JOK is one guy who gives Lamar fits, and Aluakon is another who's a very good one. The both of the Bills linebackers, both Milano and Tremaine Edmonds, are players of that type who I think are naturally will give Lamar a lot of trouble doing that sort of thing. Tell you what, let's move on to the offensive line at this point. I want to talk about each player in a little bit of detail as we roll through this.
Okay. Well, just give me your thoughts on Patrick McCurry. We've been talking about him for half the show now, so it's, give me your thoughts on him.
All right, sounds good. I thought a solid game from McCurry. It's one of his better games of the season. If he could play this average, the Ravens would be very fine with it. They will, and the Ravens will do fine if he can play at this level for whatever remaining time that Ronnie Stanley's out. 1.5 penetrations, one pressure, one quarterback hit, a big offensive holding penalty that set him back. Lamar dug him out, you know, with the throw to DeSean Jackson. But it was a big holding penalty nonetheless that definitely drilled his score a little bit. He only had two missed blocks in the game, which is really good. Three blocks in level two, made all four of his pulls, which is nice. Two highlights. C game overall. You get a little more leeway at tackle because tackles give up some pressures. They have to face the really good edge rushers. And McCurry was the highest adjustment I had of any player based on the fact that he was facing a lot of Allen and a lot of Walker in this game.
Yeah, and like that was kind of like one of the key matchups that I kind of, you know, tabbed coming into this game. Was like, you know, like how many one-on-one opportunities was he going to get against their top 10 draft picks there? You know, Josh Allen's former Pro Bowler, and Trayvon Walker's had some nice flashes this season. And so I thought McCurry played pretty, like I said, almost above average, you know, given the lack of depth that the Ravens have had at tackle in the past few years. He's played well above average in my estimation. But you know, he's kind of been as advertised. You know, the Ravens can't say enough about Patrick McCurry and all the things that he brings to the table for this offense. And you know, that they call him the utility, you know, the five position player. And you know, he's a really valuable asset, especially for the cheap amount of money that they're paying him for. I mean, for a guy who can play any position at all across the offensive line, to only making I think he's only averaging $3-4 million a year is pretty awesome.
I wanted to say it was like 3 years, $16 million they signed him for, but I may have it wrong. So it may have been 4 years, $16 million. So anyway, I agree with you is the thing that Patrick McCurry is giving them. I say when he give if he can come in and play like an average left tackle, which I think is really what he's done so far, maybe slightly below average, a C-minus level. But if you have a guy who can come off your bench and do that at left tackle, that's more than almost any other team in the league can give you as your second left tackle. It's not what you want as your first left tackle. It's decidedly not what you want as your first left tackle. But he's a very nice spare tire that is not too undersized for the rim, let's call it. You know how you get those little tiny spare tires on some cars? He's not that. So
he's better than a donut.
He's better than Alejandro Villanueva, who is a big man who is a small tire nonetheless at left tackle. Yeah. All right. So let's move on to Powers. And what I'll say is I think he probably had his worst game of the year. His second worst game of the year. The opener he was worse. But this game, he'd been playing very well, and he'd been playing very well for a long time, in particular as a pass blocker. He had problems mainly as a run blocker in this game, 2.5 penetrations allowed, but also allowed two pressures. He got beat twice on pulls where he just was not quite quick enough, which led to a very low pulling score for the game, only 8 of a 15 possible pull points. And those plays are often important, and they were important in this game because they ended up resulting in two penetrations on the two missed blocks that he on the two pull blocks that he missed, or on two of the pull blocks that he missed. He split another penetration with McCurry on a play, two pressures allowed in the game, got backed up on a play where he just got a zero that caused a big three-car pileup that involved, I don't know if you saw it, Moses getting pancaked to the ground off his own thing. The Ravens have not had troubles with that. They've been very good about, in the past few years, of having their interior offensive linemen not getting backed up and obstructing pulls. And I accounted most of that due to footwork, but it's also, you know, particularly when you want to run counter and you got a tackle pulling, your guard, if he gets backed up pretty quickly, can give your tackle on the opposite side problems. And that's what exactly what happened on the Moses play is the center was able to get by him, but he got the backup on Moses hurt, and Moses went flying, and the play got stopped because of it. And I think that was the run for minus one by Edwards that you mentioned either in the show or in the first.
By now, you're probably noticing that there's strange tall boys of beer in the bottled water section of your local stores. Well, that's because it's not beer. It's actually mountain spring water from the Alps, and it's called Liquid Death. Why is it called Liquid Death? Well, because it will brutally murder your thirst, and their infinitely recyclable tallboy cans help bring death to plastic bottles. They also donate 10% of their profits from every can sold to help kill plastic pollution. By now, you probably know how much I love Liquid Death. Well, every week I tell you about a different way I've used Liquid Death to mess with people. This week it was taking a cooler full of Liquid Death to the softball game. Because as our team chugged down Liquid Death, our play improved while the other team drank other stuff and maybe got a little sloppy out on the field. So take Liquid Death. The other team has no clue what you're doing. Or take it to work. We've talked about that many times. Drag it around to your friends at school. Maybe the carpool lane. Maybe we'll talk about the carpool lane next week. Just take Liquid Death. Enjoy it. It's ice cold water. You're going to have a great time and fun. Go get Liquid Death at your local Harris Teeter or 7-Eleven, or find Liquid Death retailers near you with their store locator tool at liquiddeath.com/filmstudy. That's liquiddeath.com/filmstudy.
Yeah. And the thing about Powers is, you know, he's a almost like McCary in a sense. He's a very solid player, you know, a very, very solid player. And people will always want to clamor that, you know, like, oh, when just get Ben Cleveland in the game, he's nasty, or he's this and he's that. But, you know, as far as like when it comes to run blocking, I honestly think that Powers is the better run blocker at this stage of his career than Cleveland is. Cleveland's a pretty good. He has a lot more upside as a pass protector than Powers does right now, just because of his sheer size. But I feel like a guy like Ben Powers is like a really well-rounded player right now. And he's having, like I said, this may have been his worst game since week one, but he's really having a solid season overall. And I just think that, you know, sometimes he just doesn't have enough sand in his pants to kind of hold that anchor in the middle of, like I said, that kind of leads to those pile-ups.
That certainly has been a problem, but I do want to make this point out, because this is an important distinction I make regularly between Powers and not to pick on Linderbaum, but their results are so similar but flipped that they can really get at what's valuable as a player here. But Ben Powers was the number one ranked guard as a pass blocker coming into this week. He didn't have a really great pass blocking week. He dropped the third overall by the PFF scores, but it's close. Joe Tooney is at 84.6, Michael Onwenu at 84.5, and Ben Powers at 84.2. So if you believe them and you don't want to believe my system, PFF is saying the same thing I am, is basically what I'm telling you. As a run blocker, 50.2. Okay, that's bad. 60 is kind of an average. If you get a zero on the old PFF scores, you probably get a 60 over a longer period of time. And basically, those numbers are reversed for Linderbaum at center, who's got a really good run blocking number and a really bad pass blocking number that is near the bottom of the league. And the problem is, pass blocking is what's really important. Run blocking is less important. And unfortunately, a player like Powers is just, he's more valuable right now. I'm not saying trajectory. I'm not saying, you know, they're going to lose him probably next year because he'll be signed out of here with the season he's had. But, you know, Linderbaum's play, run and pass blocking are not equivalent. And if you have a system that makes him that way, it's like combining slugging and on base into a single OPS number. It really undervalues what on base percentage is. So think of his pass blocking as on base percentage, run blocking as slugging percentage. People love to watch home runs, I know, and that's some of what, you know, Linderbaum gives you. But Powers has been the more effective overall blocker because he's a better pass blocker. see you in this game anyway for powers.
Okay. You want to hit the Linderbaum next, since we were already on,
sure,
on the topic?
Sure, yeah, I've kind of already rolled all over. Linderbaum had a really good game, by the way. Surrendered one pressure, which is good. It probably was just about his best game of the year. I had seven missed blocks. That's a lot for a center, and six of them were losses at the line of scrimmage. But by and large, he didn't lose badly enough that he was causing pressures or causing losses on run plays, either of those things. So even though the losses at the line of scrimmage were a high percentage of his total missed blocks, which is bad, it was generally a very good passing game for him. And one pressure has been much better than he's been doing on average in games. People who know how to grade know I have a tougher standard for pressures than what PFF does. I require a 3 second clean pocket, and they require 2.5. So it's a big difference there. He went 5 for 5 on his pulls in this game. He blocked well in space, which he always does. 3 blocks in level 2. A nice highlight play that was a combination block. Snaps were solid again in this game, so he didn't have a deduction for anything like that, and a B overall. And like I said, I think this he might have had one game better for the year, but I'm just going to take a quick look at my overall stat sheet here. And yes, he did have one game better. It was against New England in week 3. Otherwise, he had one game that was equivalent at a .88, and that was in week 5 against the Bengals. So tied for the second best game of the year for Linderbaum. So fine game, and great to see him improve his pass blocking a little bit in particular in this one.
Yeah, there wasn't, you know, that guy on the interior defensive line for the Jaguars that you're really afraid of. And so I didn't really think that he was going to have too much trouble in this game. And I figured it'd end up being one of his more higher graded games.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, unfortunately, you don't get to face a line with no that guy very often. You know, they're going to have to face Pittsburgh twice, and they get Cam Hayward twice. And, you know, they obviously got Vita Vea and Dexter Lawrence and Quinnen Williams and a whole bunch of other monsters. But when you really look at everybody's roster, you know, there's, you know, 15 or 18 teams that have some really dominant big guy in the middle of that line somewhere who, you know, probably other defensive coordinators going to try and line up on Linderbaum. So, you know, you're really in a position where even if the guy might be a 3-tech normally and he might play against a guard, he might get lined up against Linderbaum as a zero sum in some passing situations because, you know, they want to take advantage of that relationship.
Yeah, I'm not sure if the Broncos have coming up here as that guy, but you know, their defense overall has been pretty solid this year.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's talk a little bit about Kevin Zeitler, who unfortunately did not have a good game. 3 full pressures allowed. That's not usual for a guard. It's definitely not usual for Zeitler to allow that much pressure. He's been having a great year. Didn't have any game worse than a C so far. 11 missed blocks. Now that's really bad, and it wasn't any one thing because he only had 3 losses at the line of scrimmage. So he missed pulls. He missed blocks in level 2. L2NB is a fairly common notation. It means moved to level 2 and could not find a block. He had PNBs, pull no block, on several occasions. He only got 3 of his 6 points on pulls. He slipped moving to level 2, which is still not a loss, you know, and that's okay. He had a zone play where couldn't find anybody to block. And that will happen occasionally, but it's still a missed block by this system. He got only 3 of 6 points on pulls in this game, 2 blocks in level 2, and a D for the game. So unfortunate, just not Zeitler at his best. And you know, there's Pro Bowl voting going on now. I still encourage you to vote for Kevin Zeitler, who's having a terrific year. He's been the rock of the Ravens line throughout, but not a good game this time.
Yeah, no, and those kind of weeks just happen. Like you said, not because he was getting his ass kicked or anything like that, just because, you know, it was just a mishap here and mishap there. Those things kind of tend to pile up to where, you know, you're not having your best game just because, you know, you were, you know, the offense as a whole, but, you know, you as an individual just weren't having your best day. Like I said, not really finding work and, you know, like having those missteps here and there. But like I said, overall he's been really good this season. And like I said, when I saw that he hadn't received a Pro Bowl nod before, I'm like, man, I feel like this guy's been playing for over a decade.
Very surprising, isn't it?
Yeah, well, yeah. When they first signed him, I just assumed that he had had at least like one or two, just because like you know the high standard that you know that he's accustomed to being talked about in I wouldn't say rarefied air, but you know he's usually regarded as one of the better guards in the league, and you just assume that one of the better guards at least once or twice got a Pro Bowl nod. And Pro Bowl nod isn't the end all be all for offensive line success or any position of success. You just think that a guy who's been on some pretty decent lines over the years would have at least one. But hopefully we can get him one this year.
Yeah, very valid point, by the way, because he played a whole bunch of years for Cincinnati, 2 years with Cleveland, 2 years with the Giants, now 2 years with the Ravens. He has not yet, I do not believe, I'm trying to think if, nope, he's not been to Super Bowl yet. So that's none of the Super Bowl has not obstructed his ability to go to the Pro Bowl. Let's put it that way. There may have been a time where he was an alternate and they asked him to go as an alternate and he just wouldn't do it for some reason. But he's behind Marshall Yanda, and they usually, I guess, get three guards to go to the Pro Bowl, if I recall correctly. I don't think it's four. I think it's only three from each conference. So if Marshall Yanda's got one of the spots already, he's in a hole. And then there's always good guards in the league, and Betonio and DeCastro and players like that have been dominant for mm-hmm. for a number of years that would be guys that and the New England guys for that matter would frequently be there. So is what it is, I guess.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll get it this year.
Let's move on and talk about Morgan Moses. A pretty good game for Morgan. One pressure only allowed. He did miss 10 blocks, which is a lot. And a lot of the same thing is just a mix of various things. Getting the three-car pile up on the pull was a tough one. But he did make four of his five pulls. That was the only one where he missed. They do include some courtesy points, being the trailer on a pull. They had him down blocking a lot. And that's a good way to pick up a sure thing block at level one and not have to worry in my system about necessarily getting the level two block. But he made 9 level two blocks. So it's really hard combination to make 9 level two blocks and still miss 10 blocks in the same game. And that's really hard to do.
Yeah, he's definitely a guy that looks for work. And, you know, he's the kind of guy that even if he's making initial blocks on time, he's still looking for somebody's head to take off somebody's head, even though he got his helmet taken off in this game.
Yeah. There's on one of the screen on a screen pass that went left. He was not part of any attempt to move into level two, which is something I noticed. And I thought part of me says that's a good thing because the if he over aggressively moves to level two, we're going to have an IDP called, and he's already been called for a couple this year, I believe. Don't want to see plays ruined by IDP. Post snap penalties by offensive linemen, extremely, extremely costly. So it's actually good to see him hold back, but there was no attempt to make a block even after that. He didn't look to his right for who's the cornerback that I can cut off that might be coming back across the field, you know, to make this play from a 10-yard play into a 30-yard play. In fact, I think it might have been about a 5-yard play anyway. But anyway, it did not see him moving a lot on that, but had three highlights, which led the team. Most of those obviously are combination blocks given what he's doing. B for the game. So he's certainly been everything the Ravens could have hoped in terms of the combination of durability and quality of play this year so far. I'm just real happy with what the Ravens have gotten out of Morgan Moses.
Yeah, and another guy who's like a great value signing. You know, 3 years, $15 million. I mean, to get what you'd be getting from him this year for only $5 million is an absolute steal. One of many this year.
Yeah, hopefully they get the whole 3 years out of him. And you know, I'm already concerned that Zeitler might not be back next year. Obviously, a lot of players might not be back if the Ravens go all the way. But if the Ravens don't go all the way, they still want to make a run at it with Lamar under the tag next year. They're going to want some of these guys back. And Zeitler remains kind of a bargain at only $6.5 million more, I believe, in year three of this contract. So some players really don't want to lose that are, you know, kind of still, I think, at risk of not being around next year because they're older guys who might retire.
Yeah, and I don't think Morgan Moses is one of those guys. I think he's in year 9, year 10. I think he's a guy that, you know, that's like a really like – even if he loses his starting job to Daniel Falele next year, he's still like a great – I mean, how often are you going to find a quality starting level tackle for $5 million in the open market? It just doesn't happen. I mean, they got him for a hell of a deal this past offseason, and I think he's going to be a guy that, even if Falele does emerge in year 2, they're still going to keep around.
Right. I agree. I mean, it'll be year three that the question will come up with Moses of whether or not he wants to retire. He's at that age. And, you know, the last dollar amount is not that significant. He's collected most of the guaranteed money under the contract and whatnot. He's collected all the guaranteed money. And he just says, you know what? It's not really worth it for me to hang around. If you want to negotiate a new 2-year deal, I'll do it. You know, but as far as playing the last year of this contract, it might just not be worth it. So hopefully, anyway, the Ravens get a good year the remainder of this year, which is most important, and a big year next year out of him. And it's not the big deal that he doesn't play out that third year with the team. All right, well, let's move on to the skill position discussion. And we've talked, obviously, about a lot of these players, but I still think it's worth it. And we have some that I can look at on the list and say, yeah, we need to spend a little more time on them. But you're the guest. Give me your comments on some player. I'll try and respond to it, and then I'll go come back at you.
I mean, we've talked about him a little bit already, but DeSean Jackson, man. I mean, this really was the game where I'm like, yeah. See, this is why the Ravens signed him right here. You know, just the show that threat. Like, I knew he could still burn. You know, but you know, like getting over top of the opposing defense, but to actually see it come to fruition, especially in a timely manner that it did. I mean, the Ravens really needed it too. Just got backed up. You know, got that 23-yard or whatever that catch to James Brochet was negated, and to come back and get that. It was like beautiful throw. Great catch. I mean, like, Lamar put it in the perfect place, absolute dime, the deep down the field. And if we can just get a couple of those a game, like I said, not even completed, but just like a couple of like 2 to 3 of those shots, maybe even 4 of those shots a game. I'm telling you, man, it'll open up so much more stuff for this offense underneath, which is where Lamar likes to do most of his bread and butter is, you know, at the intermediate level.
Yeah. I mean, it was certainly exciting to see. And when DeSean was first signed, I wouldn't say it was really excited, but at least I looked back at his yards per target the last couple of years, and they've been fantastic despite very limited opportunities. And obviously injuries have played a big role in what's happened to him in his entire career, but obviously in the last couple of years. So he played 3 games for Philadelphia, and then he played 5 games for Philadelphia in 20. And then last year he did play 16 games for 2 teams, but only got 34 targets. So he's only had 70 targets the last 3 seasons total. So 23 targets a season is practically nothing. But he's also averaged something like 11 yards per, maybe even more than that, 11 yards per target over that period. Not per reception, per target. And make sure I have that correct, because I might be looking at the yards per reception. Nope, I'm looking at the yards per target column. He's averaged over 11 yards. And so I put that on Twitter, and I was at least that is something to be excited about. And somebody responded back immediately, but you know he's going to get hurt the very first game. And you know what? Both of those things can be right. and we've seen DeSean Jackson now have 5 targets this season for 90 yards, so 18 yards per target, even outplaying that. And of course, he was hurt and missed a week after that very first game. So if that's what DeSean Jackson is right now, is he'll give us 5 targets every 3 weeks. 5 targets every 3 weeks, or has he actually been around for 4 weeks? I got to actually look at that. No, it's just been around for 3 weeks. So if he can give us 5 targets every 3 weeks for 18 yards per target, I'll take it.
Yeah. I mean, like, you almost kind of like want to deploy him like a situational pass rusher. You know, yeah. He's the guy that comes onto the field when you need to, like, I guess in an offensive sense to back up the defense, which creates more space, prevent that. Like, hey, we have this legit deep threat over here. You know, because people don't want to give Devin Duvernay's respect as a deep threat, so they don't usually give him the kind of cushion that they do DeSean Jackson. But you know, a lot of these younger DBs, they've been watching DeSean Jackson since they were in middle school and elementary school, and to think that, like, you're like, oh man, this D-Jax, you know, it kind of gets in their head, and then like you. I don't think it's always part of the plan for them to play so far off of him, but you'll see sometimes guys will give him 10, 12 yard cushions. And then like he did on his first catch, he went for like 12 yards because the defensive back was playing so far off because they were afraid of getting beat over top.
Yeah. He definitely is now not picking up the decreasing value of marginal targets that a lot of great receivers pick up. So if you're Mark Andrews, you have a lot of little 5-yard plays mixed into your thing where they're Lamar's trying to get a first down with you, or if any number of other receivers. Hollywood Brown, the end of last year, was getting a lot of crap targets from Huntley because the ball had to be schemed out quickly underneath. And those don't help your statistics at all. But DeSean Jackson is not really at tremendous risk of getting low value targets anymore. The Ravens need him too much to do exactly what you said, to peel the top off that defense, to get those safeties playing deep, to force them to be at least honest about cover one play, if not cover two play. I mean, I think we talked about in the first show that we're not going to see a lot of cover zero run against the Ravens. You know,
not this year.
DeSean Jackson on the field. Yeah.
Not even just like with DeSean Jackson on the field, but also with the improved pass protection. So they're like, hey, this isn't Alejandro Villanueva and Tyree Phillips we're going against this year on the outside of tackles. So the teams know that, you know, the Ravens, like, you know, they went back into the lab and had some answers and got healthier on the offensive line. So, you know, the whole cover zero blitz thing isn't as big of a deal as it was coming into this year.
Yeah. And I think Jackson has got a little smarter about how to attack it too, because what Miami did was drop players in the middle and Jackson didn't really have the answer for it, but they've done more. That was one of the things they really figured out, was how to get the ball outside against those kind of looks very quickly. And Jackson, I think, has become very good at it. So he deserves some of the credit as well.
Yeah. I really like when he dumps the ball out to like Kenyon Drake. It's one of my favorite plays of this offense sometimes. Like, I guess not favorite plays, one of my favorite answers to the blitz is like when he like sees it, reads it pre-snap and like, all right, bet. And then he'll motion running back over to the side where the blitz, opposite where the blitz is coming from, and just, or where the blitz is coming from, and just dump it out there.
Yeah. DeSean Jackson, by the way, only played 10 snaps in this game at wide receiver, whereas, you know, Robinson got 43 and we saw 56 from Duvernay. I mean, those are, DeSean Jackson's already a situational receiver in exactly the way you've been mentioning. So, well, let me move on. I want to talk about Robinson a little bit, because he has not been the same player consistently, certainly throughout the season. This was a little bit of a tough game for him, certainly in terms of what he did. And it's not that he didn't make any plays. He did have one catch for 17, but the drop was bad. You know, he was overthrown once. Don't think it was a ball he was even close to getting to. It was one of the throws that Jackson, one of the few throws that Jackson really left on the field during the game. But I need to see a little more out of him than, you know, what he's showed in this game. And his progression from 2 weeks ago to 1 week ago with the 9 for 9 catch game going to 1 for 4, extremely similar to what happened to Likely, going from whatever it was, 6 for 7, 7 for 8, whatever it was, down to about 1 for 4 also.
Yeah. And it's a thing that, you know, I've been on, I wouldn't say on the Marcus Robinson hype train, but like, you know, he's the guy who, like, if you watch the tape, he consistently gets open. You know, he's the guy that consistently gets open, consistently gets separation. He just doesn't always get the ball his way, or sometimes like Lamar, sometimes just feel like they're always not on the same page, or he may short arm it or overthrow him a tad bit. And it's just like, if they can get, you know, more consistent on those plays, man, I just feel like DeMarcus Robinson can be a more of a factor in this offense than he currently is. Instead of like the once in a while guy, he can be a consistent playmaker for this offense, or at least a consistent chain mover, because he's proven he can at least do that.
Yeah. All right, great. Well, your turn. Who do you want to talk about?
Devin Duvernay. You know, they got him. They got him more involved this game. I think he finished game with 5 or 6 touches, which is, you know, up from what 4 in the past 2 games combined. So I like that they got the ball in his hands in a myriad of different ways. He had a horrible game as a returner. I mean, just his decisions to not field balls or to field certain balls really kind of cost the Ravens at times, and they were able to overcome some of them. But other ones, you just kept giving them. You kept giving their punt team chance after chance after chance to pin you guys back, but just not fair catching it. So as especially aspect of the game, one of his worst of his career. But it was nice to see him get more involved on the offensive side of the ball, pick up some nice key first downs for them. And I'd like to see him carry the ball at least like 5 times a game, because when he does, like, good things happen when he touches the ball. So that'd be nice to see. And you know, even I was really disappointed when he dropped that. I was like, look, a bubble screen or like a little quick. Yeah. And like I felt like he could have got like at least a decent amount of yardage out of that play. And so, like, you know, he has to do his part too. But I feel like if the Ravens keep scheming up more plays to get the ball in his hand, it'll have more confidence. He'll have more confidence. Lamar will have more confidence in him. And it'll only benefit the offense in a good way.
Yeah, I basically agree with what you said about as a receiver and certainly as a returner in this game. I want to see two carries a game from Duvernay. I think that's enough because I think that puts the fear of Duvernay in them. This is a team that uses a lot of their motion on the tight end anyway. They don't motion every play. I mean, no team does, but they don't motion every play. When they do, it's a lot of Ricard motioning into the middle. It used to be Boyle's job. Now it's really Ricard's job. And sometimes it's Duvernay doing the same thing as well with jet motion. When Duvernay crosses, he crosses two ways. You can look for this on the film. If he crosses just behind the lineman, we really treat him as a tight end in terms of wide receiver. You can call him that. But as far as on my score sheet, he gets scored as a tight end if he's between the tackles at the time the ball is snapped, which is fairly typical. But he takes another route a fair amount of the time, which basically puts him in position to take a mesh point handoff for Lamar. He doesn't have to get that ball every time. You just have to show it to the opponents. You just have to show them that motion where he's not orbiting back, but going back through that mesh point possibility there. And if you show them that five times a game and you give it to them twice, I think he really got something with Devin Duvernay. I think that's just, you know, I was up for him being in the backfield a few times because I think that would help as well. But I think he's actually probably more valuable to the Ravens this year being on the outside, forcing a corner to cover, and then showing that jet motion and spreading the line of scrimmage horizontally as best he does with the run.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like I said, that presenting that horizontal threat would be great. And I love what when he does get the ball on those sweeps, and it's almost like you know he's too fast not to get to the edge, especially when he has a blocker in front of him. And it's like, especially those plays when he gets like 7 or 8 yards, I'm like, yeah, let's see some more of that.
Yeah, agree on that. Let's move ahead to one other player. Had a great game, certainly deserves more discussion maybe than he's had so far, as Josh Oliver. 4 receptions for 76 in this game, including the big touchdown to go ahead, the big 40-yard play on the right. And it was, a nice set of receptions in space for Oliver. I don't think Jacksonville really respected him the way they should have. We talked a lot on the first episode about what the value was of him going down or not going down at the 1 yard line. I thought there was a lot and it was something that, the Ravens really needed to get into the huddle to try and make sure they won the game with that. There is some question about whether or not he really needed to run out of bounds at the end of the game, or whether he could have gotten an extra 4 or 5 yards for Justin Tucker, slid down, called timeout himself, and still gotten a 63-yard opportunity maybe instead of 67 for Justin.
Yeah, I was wondering that. I was just thinking about that earlier today. I'm like, man, if only he was a little bit faster, or maybe he would have stayed in bounds. But by the time he got out of bounds, what there was like 1 or 2 seconds left on the clock. So if he had 2 seconds left on the clock, so would he have been able to get the timeout called in enough time? Because we've seen a couple occasions this year where, like, you know, the guy like tried to fight for a little extra yards and then tried to call a timeout, but the time had already expired and the referees weren't going to give it to him. So I thought, like, I was like, man, you know, given that there were only 2 seconds on the time, like, could he have gotten an extra yard? Yeah, maybe. But that kick was more than just a yard short. So, I think if they would have got the ball to a faster player quickly, then possibly. And I'm not saying that – I'm not sure how much faster he is or Mark Andrews is than Josh Oliver. But like you said, they were respecting him enough as a pass catcher. So I like that play. You know, if only Ricard had went down a little sooner on the kick return or maybe kicked it into another gear, got a couple more yards, who knows what would have happened.
Yeah, I thought, you know, we had this discussion a little bit on the defense show, but I thought it was a very good return by Ricard. I thought he 14 yards for the 4 seconds was just the right trade-off for that. And it left them in a position where they could have a out-of-bounds play. It didn't even have to be an out-of-bounds play. They could have one play to midfield that they could have gotten off. And the fact that he went to Ricard, sorry, to Oliver on the right side, I don't think was a function of that was the best receiver. I think it was a function of that was the only receiver that Lamar really thought was open. And then obviously, you know, going for the out of bounds spot was not the key thing there. He probably, if he had just run north, he might have been able to get the extra 4 to 5 yards it would have taken for Tucker to make that kick. And we're using the fallacy of the predestined play, as John Miller used to call it, as the Orioles announcer, was that you assume everything else works out exactly the same and Tucker kicks it exactly the same. Beautiful kick by Tucker. Would have been good from probably just over 60 yards anyway, maybe as far as 63 or 64 even, but it landed on the end line. I think they were emboldened to take that chance because Tucker's last kickoff went to that side and went through the uprights. So that was a 75-yard field goal off a tee, but a 75-yard field goal.
Yeah. It sucks that his streak of a fourth quarter, fourth quarter in overtime kicks got snapped. But, if it was to get snapped on any attempt, I'm glad it was a game-winning one, I guess, you know? Yeah. I was holding my daughter when he attempted that kick. I was thinking, like, oh man, that's going in. And then you could even see like Falele and Powers, they were already jumping up and celebrating, like thinking it went in. And then when it came just short, I was like, no.
I'm sure you're very careful with your daughter. You probably know not to scream when she's probably sleeping as this is going on. Wouldn't want to have you spike her if you had made the kick. Man. I'm sure that wouldn't happen, but
if you would have made the kick, I probably would have. I wouldn't toss it through the roof, but I definitely would have tossed her up in the air, and because like they're in the Ravens' magical first half of the season last year when they were making all those comebacks. She was my magic baby, man. Whenever I was holding her, the Ravens mounted a crazy comeback, especially during that Colts game.
All right, outstanding. Anybody else you want to talk about here? We got a mailbag we can go to if there's nobody else you really think we've hit on. If we think we've hit anybody else,
Outside of that drop, Andrews had a pretty solid game. Like I said, he would have had that long catch down the sideline if Arden Key hadn't held his arms. But he played solid. Gus Edwards was as advertised. You know, in his first game back, you know, didn't he only averaged like 3.3 yards per carry, but he got those hard yards for the Ravens when they needed him.
Yeah, I mean, it's the touchdown run from a yard out where he stretched out over the bodies, that was really good. And not every running – well, I guess most running backs know to do it. I think there are quarterbacks who turtle up in that situation and probably wouldn't try and advance the ball. But, Edwards certainly knew how to get more yardage when you're on top of other players, which was, I thought, good. Not happy about the fumble, but, hey, who is? When it happened, I thought this is the Giants game all over again with the turnover deep in their own end.
Same here.
Score to get flipped. So yeah, let's go to the mailbag for a minute here. Look on hashtag film study mailbag if you would, and we'll take a couple questions here. Let's see. This is good. Would like to hear from Huddle It Up Films at Huddle It Up Films says would like to hear both of your thoughts on how the Ravens should manage DeSean Jackson's reps. Even at his stage in his career, he adds speed and veteran nuance to the wide receiver corps.
Well, I kind of touched on it a little earlier. I like to see him use kind of like situationally, like how they were Justin Houston when he first got back from his groin injury, like minimal, I want to say minimal snaps, but limited snaps, maximum impact. So, I'm not saying only bring him in on obvious passing situations, but, when they run some of those heavy sets where they have more tight ends and stuff on the field, have DeSean Jackson be that ISO receiver or that guy, like you said, lined up in the slot and who kind of like gets slips behind the defense over top, either down the middle, deep down the middle of the field, or, crossing on a deep over route or on a nine route. Like just like, have him in for the occasional shot or just at least to present the occasional shot so that you can open up some more things underneath.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think one of the nice things is that DeSean Jackson coming in with fresh legs after there's already been three or four plays, particularly if they've been pass plays on a series, is almost unfair to the defense. I mean, those cornerbacks can be gassed. The safeties probably don't even like seeing it, to come on, because they know the pressure is going to be on them to make the eventual coverage and tackle of a player like that. But I really like him being used situationally. I like him being a guy they can bring on just a little bit, but I think you nailed it on the head. So we'll just move to the next question here, which is from @Nikki622A. which is thoughts on the drop issues and if Lamar's overthrow related to less quality receivers inability to track the ball. I feel that he didn't have such an overthrow issue with Hollywood. And he also, why do we get stopped in the red zone? So start with the tracking issue. I don't think Hollywood had a tracking issue, but Hollywood, the main thing he had was a ton more speed than any of the current Ravens receivers other than maybe Jackson. So, you know, it was harder to overthrow him. Lamar still did on occasion, but it was harder to overthrow him. And regarding the red zone thing, I think we really covered that early in the show, so I'm going to leave that one alone. But what are your thoughts on the ball tracking for the Ravens receivers this group?
I think maybe on that second play, with the second play of the game where he overthrew Robinson, I think Hollywood runs underneath that throw and probably scores. You know, like, you know, sometimes I feel like he kind of, I want to say, overestimates the speed of his receivers maybe, or thinks that they can get the spots where, like, he's like kind of like there's been plenty of times where he's like, you know, I wouldn't say plenty of times, but there's been a handful of times, some key moments where he's had guys like with like 10 yards of separation and still just puts a little bit too much air underneath the ball. And I don't always necessarily blame it on the receivers, because like I said, they did their part. They got separation. You know, the play is there, you know, right for the picking. It's just that maybe they don't practice those plays as much in practice. I'm not sure. You know, maybe they practice Lamar's bread and butter in practice. Maybe they rep his bread and butter in practice more than they do some of those deep shots, because it just seems like they're always his deep ball accuracy has been way off this year. I mean, there's just been times where he's had guys, like I said, wide open. It's just like, oh, look, this guy's not Hollywood Brown, okay? He's not going to run underneath that ball. So you might have to take a little bit off of it, you know, in order to connect on some of those. I think having a guy like Sean Jackson is really going to help them, help that deep ball accuracy a little bit more the more they go on.
Well, you couldn't be anything but more excited about throwing a deep ball to DeSean Jackson. So a lot of it is going to come down, I think, to Lamar seeing the defender and trying to outthrow the defender as opposed to trying to throw open his receiver. So you understand the difference between those two. He wants to get the ball 3 yards past the defender as opposed to throwing his receiver to an open spot of the field when he's not sure that that his receiver can get there. With Jackson, there won't be any question about Jackson being able to get to the spot before the defender. You know, obviously things can happen. You get injured on a play. But he's going to be throwing the ball when he's even and leaving, or maybe he's even gone already. And he's going to throw it to a spot that he knows the defender can't get to. And that spot is typically going to be one that's within the catch radius of DeSean Jackson. So I think it's going to give him a lot more confidence on those long balls. I don't see how he couldn't be more excited and end up being more efficient on those throws when DeSean is the target.
Yeah, I definitely think that 62-yard bomb they completed, it's going to be a big confidence booster for their deep passing game going forward. Like, I think you're probably going to see more shots to DeSean on those plays earlier in games, just so they can kind of jump up on top of teams early instead of needing it to come through for them late.
All right, one more question. This will be the last of the night. We've been here for over 2 hours, but this is a good one. I always love talking football with you, my friend. Cole Philippou, at Cole Philippou, says, do you think Ronnie is at greater risk of getting rolled up on because he gives ground while blocking? Both roll-ups have been, I think he's talking about the original James, was it James Hurst still playing with that rolled up? No, James Hurst rolled up.
TJ Watt had blocked somebody into his ankle.
I don't think it was Hurst though, but something is sticking in my mind that it was Hurst, but it was in 2020. I don't think Hurst was still with the Ravens at that point. So I don't know who it was. All right. Well, anyway, do you think he's at greater risk of being rolled up because he gives ground while blocking? So we've often talked about that on the show, that, you know, he mirrors so well and he does a good job of giving a little bit of ground so that he can still maintain his position relative to a pass rusher. Lamar's very comfortable with that method. He's very comfortable getting that soft bump from that side that can occur as long as Stanley can keep the guy's hands and body off him. And is that potentially a risky blocking strategy for Stanley, as opposed to, say, really being more aggressive in terms of getting his hands on a pass rusher and trying to aggressively push him out of a pocket?
Oh man, that's really a tough one. You know, you kind of don't want to mess with an all pro left tackle's technique, especially if this is what kind of got him there. And this is like what he's kind of refined over, because he's not the same guy he was, you know, when he came into the league in 2016, when he was started off, you know, like, you know, replacing Uge Monroe, you know, so he's definitely grown as a blocker. And then it just, with the transition from Flacco to Jackson, you kind of have to learn how to, you know, kind of adjust your technique to your quarterback. And I feel like with Lamar, he's perfectly fine, like you said, with that, you know, kind of like that bumping into him kind of thing. But when he hits the ground like that and gets blocked into him, I think those are just like kind of fluky occurrences more so than any indication of like, oh, maybe something he needs to fix with his technique, because you don't want him to start changing up to try to or play scared. So that's when you kind of like leave yourself susceptible to, you know, getting beat by certain inside moves or counters or something like that.
Yeah, I think when you look at Ronnie Stanley's career, and he's been in the league, what, for 7 years now? So he's probably had, you know, over 5,000 plays. 5,000 blocking plays. I could actually look at this in terms of pass blocking snaps, but it looks like he's had, you know, 2,600 pass blocking snaps, 2,600 and change, and two of them went wrong in the way that you're talking about. He's been rolled up other times, so maybe, you know, if you've seen something, it would be fair to point to more of these actually occurring, but it's such a rare occurrence. There's no way statistically we'd have enough evidence to say this is something we should plan for and expect to happen again. So I'm with you on the fluky occurrence thing. Good question, though. Great questions tonight. We got to call it here. Josh, just love talking football with you, my friend. And anytime you can come on, whether it's for a short or one of the big shows like this, always appreciate having you.
Yeah, that was a blast talking football with you, man. It's one of the more fun things I do as far as covering this stuff is coming on podcasts like this and having great conversations, great content.
All right. Really appreciate it, Josh. Other folks out there, if you want to do a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. Otherwise, try to pass this pod along to one other person you think is a Ravens fan, might like this kind of content, and show them how to bring it up at work on their computer off Film Study Baltimore. You can play it directly off the website. Don't have to download anyone. So that guy who's my age, 59, doesn't download podcasts onto his phone like a normal person, go ahead and help him out. Just play it off the website one time for him and get it going. Anyway, really appreciate you folks listening in for as long as you have on these two episodes. Hope you caught both of them and both defensive episodes as well. Josh, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.